This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today. I am suspicious that there may be some sadness in my future. My little recorder is doing some odd things. Like, sometimes when I hook it up to my computer, it just doesn't link up. And just now, as I was testing to make sure the audio was working, I was hitting the button on the remote control, and nothing was happening. But if I pull the battery pack and put the battery pack back in, then it's fine. So, we'll see. One of these weeks, I may have to invest in a new little recorder, although I have to say, this little Sony recorder that I have, which is like a PMC something, it has served well, given that I am on the 12th year of podcasts, and this is episode 638, and it has been almost exclusively the recorder that I have used for these last 12 years, 11 and a half years. But we may be coming to an end. Wait, has it been 12 years? 12 years worth of podcasts, 52 times 12. Maybe it has been 12 years. Anyways, so that's all well and good. I am heading home at this point. Normally, on Thursdays, I run by the church and help set up some sound, help set up the video. But we had a big team meeting and divided up some tasks, and so I am off today. Other people are going to be doing that, so yay! So that's good, kind of spreading the knowledge of how we get that stuff all taken care of. And so that's good that other people have a chance to do it in case I'm not around or Dylan's not around. We can still get things put together. So, good. All is well. What else? So, good week at work. We're able to get some things accomplished that needed to be accomplished. So, we're good there. I'm presently headed home to pull the ramp out of the garage and get it set up going up to our front door, because Nana, my mother-in-law, Ned's mom, Nana is coming to stay with us for a little while. She had a tumble. It's been two weeks now. Thankfully, she only cracked her hip. Didn't really break it severely, so there was not a need to do surgery. She was in the hospital for a few days, and then subsequently went into physical rehab at Maranatha Village for a week, 2 weeks. And so they are releasing her. They have released her, I should say, today, and she is... Nett is taking her back to her house so she can get a bunch of stuff. And then she's coming out to our house to stay for, you know, several more weeks just to make sure that everything's okay. And so I've got to get the ramp back out in case we need the ramp, etc., etc. So all that is fine and well. You may recall she fell down several months ago and cracked her knee, and we did the same thing. We just brought her out to the house and she recovered and she's been doing fine, but she was just setting down a plant container and kind of lost her balance a little bit. Thankfully she landed on the grass, not on the sidewalk, so I think that cushioned her fall a little bit, which is good. So all is well there, and we don't have any problems whatsoever. She's as sweet as can be, and We enjoy having her over at the house, and so all is well. So we'll just get the ramp set back up. She does enjoy her independent living, but, you know, for a couple of weeks here, we'll just kind of watch over and make sure she finishes getting healed up, and then we'll go from there. So that's all well and good. The writing is going fine, just working on final edits for book 14. I hope to have that book read through by the end of this weekend. Then I'll build all the files out for both the print version and for the Kindle and for the EPUB version, get those all uploaded. And then I'll turn around and go back into the book 15. Start my read through of book 15. So that all seems to be going fine. And I'm looking forward to finishing up book 15. I think we'll be fine. It's fun. Now that I know a little bit, you know, better where we are, I know some things. It's an interesting way to write books overlapping, because I think I've mentioned this before, but it really helps with quote-unquote foreshadowing, because I will work on a book, get it out to a beta reader, to the beta readers, then I will get halfway through the next book before I come back and do the final edits on the previous book, which means that I know I'm halfway through knowing what's going to happen in the next book as I'm doing the final edits. So, I mean, it's useful. There's been plenty of times when I've done a little bit of tweaking after the book has come back in from the beta readers to kind of help a little bit move things forward. So yeah, so that's good. So the writing is going fine. Costumes are all going fine. I'm in the process of making arms for my tailor's dummy. We won't call it a dress form. For my tailor's dummy that I had built, which worked out spectacularly well for the King Kamehameha costume. I mean, that was so much easier to build it on the dress form, the tailor's dummy. It was so much easier to build it on that, knowing that I could just pull it off of there and it would be the right height and the width and all that stuff. I mean, it was so much easier. So that's good. I did go ahead and order custom patterns for an arm pattern, and so I have one arm built. I'll build the other. I've got the other arm half built. I should be able to finish that up, so it'll have arms now that I can take off and pin back on as needed. Then once I get that done, I've got a little bit of cleanup that I need to do in terms of the 4th of July costume and then paper bag day. Once I get that stuff done, then I've got to get back on Blame It on Someone Else Day in earnest. So that'll be cute. everyone seemed to enjoy King Kamehameha Day. Had kind of a happy surprise. I had ordered some plastic Lays to give away, and when I opened up those packages and started pulling them out, they were actually pretty nice in terms of colors and a wide variety of colors. And I got like two packs of 50 each, and I gave away about 50 of them, and then I had the other ones to use when I was doing my videos, so that all worked out well. I did tell people on the video that the joke was that I didn't quite know how to approach people about giving away Lays, because you don't look at people and say, "You want a Lay?" I mean, that's not good. But, you know, people enjoyed that joke and picked up on it. So it was cute. It was fun. Let's see. So I think that's that. In kind of keeping with the new religion, new woke religion I'm trying to start, critical beauty theory. Of course, in order for my new woke religion, critical beauty theory that I talked about last week, to gain traction, I have, of course, need to denigrate all the other critical theories out there. And as part of that, I came across a YouTube video, actually just last night, that Thomas Sowell had done, and wow, boy, he is a national treasure. Really amazing. What a thinker. Goodness. And he had done a YouTube video that was an extract from a book he had written, and the name of the video was Facts About Slavery They Don't Teach You at School. And I started listening to this and I just thought, wow. I mean, I had tangentially known some of this, but he just puts everything together so well. And I rehearsed this because it's so easy for us as human beings to just focus on a certain set of facts and then just exclude everything else. You know, for instance, one of the things that I've said in the past is all this talk about equity and fairness. I just wonder why it always stops at our borders. Not always, but for the most part, it stops at our borders. Because when people talk about how unfair it is for certain groups of people to make less on average than other groups of people, no one bothers to say, you know, and it's really unfair that the people in Bangladesh make so little per month. Or the people in North Korea, I think I have this right, make approximately $2 a month. Unbelievable. But if you just get focused on a certain narrative and a certain story, and then that's all you look for things that will just reinforce that narrative, and you don't bother to listen to anything else, don't bother to look outside that narrow narrative. It's so easy for us as humans to just get completely caught up in that particular narrative, to where we imagine the world to be one thing, when if we would broaden our scope a little bit, we would realize it's been really more than that. And as I said, I have heard and known about some of these things that Thomas Sowell was talking about in this video, but they are important. They are important. So, facts about slavery they don't teach you at school. He starts off by talking about the fact that there are few things, there are few topics where the facts are so distorted as slavery. Because he talks about the fact that the narrative that we have of slavery is that it is specifically and only whites holding blacks against their wills, or Europeans holding African Americans against their wills, and that it is universally horrible that that happened. But he said, when you really step back from it and you examine the history of the world, you see that in terms of the story of slavery, yes, there was a time when Europeans held African Americans, held people of African ethnicity as slaves. Yes, there was a time that that occurred. But that was not exclusively the purview of slavery. He said it's estimated there was more slaves in India alone than in the Western Hemisphere. Said China had one of the largest and most comprehensive communities of slavery. He said there was a vast slave majority in Southeast Asia. A man named John Stuart Mills is quoted as saying, almost every major people now civilized have consisted in majority of slaves at times in the past. Abraham Lincoln did say that if slavery is not wrong, nothing is wrong. And Thomas Sowell says that that idea was really peculiar to Western civilization. He said, interestingly enough, there was no serious challenge to the moral legitimacy of slavery prior to the 18th century. He said, you can find Christian monasteries, Buddhist monasteries, they had slaves. He said, intellectuals may condemn our society, but we are peculiar in that we turned against slavery and spent a century destroying it, not only in the West, but in other countries around the world. And he said, it did not die out on its own accord. It went down fighting till the bitter end. And he said it still hasn't died out in parts of the Middle East and in Africa. He said, but we've got this image of whites enslaving blacks that's been burned into our consciousness. And he says, and it's not just a fact, but it's a causal factor to explain the present and a moral condemnation of the enslaving race. So not only are we myopic in thinking that it was just whites enslaving blacks, but then we've drug forward that time and said, well, see, that's a major cause of all the problems that we're having now, and that, you know, Europeans and white people should be universally condemned because they allowed this to happen. But if you go back and you look at slavery in the U.S., it wasn't just based on race. Said both black people and white people were enslaved. And he said, in fact, the word slave comes from Slavs, which were European. And they were enslaved for centuries before the first African became a slave in any European context. He said, interestingly enough, a lot of the other languages have the same structure for the word. He said, for most of history, the race of slaves didn't differ from the enslavers. Europeans enslaved Europeans, Africans enslaved Africans, Polynesians enslaved Polynesians. He said even indigenous peoples in the Western Hemisphere enslaved other indigenous peoples. And he said even after we had the means of transporting masses of people, said both Europeans and Africans were transported into bondage. He said pirates alone transported 1 million Europeans to the Barbary coast of North Africa. At least twice as many European slaves as Africans were transported in that way. He said white European slaves were still being bought and sold in the Islamic world decades after black slavery was abolished in the U.S. He said, what marked the West, Daniel Bornstein said, was, quote, now for the first time in Western history, the status of slave coincided with a difference of race. So, yes, it is true that within Western history, there came a time when it was primarily Europeans enslaving Africans. But in the extended history of slavery, that was a late development. So, you know, it's easy, he said, to point at the striking differences in the population and say, oh, and our population now, and say, oh, we should attribute all of those differences to the flat, to the fact that African Americans were enslaved. He said, but he said, you can, by just looking at the individual things, realize that it is demonstrable that literacy and unwed motherhoods and attitudes towards work and violence play a major part in the discrepancies that we see between those of European descent and African descent in America. He said, and I didn't quite get this part, but he was talking about how different those of European descent were between the northern states and the southern states, those of European descent, and how they had much different ways of dealing with life and interfacing with life. And he said, what's interesting is that if you attribute that to the fact that slavery existed in the South, you are ignoring the fact that when you trace the ancestors of those who lived in the South versus those who lived in the North, and you trace them back into Europe, that what you find is the differences are reflected there as well, which is kind of an interesting thing. However, in terms of all of that, he then asked the question, does the moral enormity of slavery give it more causal weight? Does the fact of slavery contribute to the reason that so many blacks grow up in single mother homes? And yet, in single mother homes. And he said, what's interesting is, according to his research, most of those who grew up in slavery grew up in two-parent families under slavery and afterwards. And he quotes a statistic to say that in 1960, two-thirds of black children grew up in two-parent families. And he said a century ago, a slightly higher percent of blacks were married versus whites. By the way, I should have said this at the beginning, but as I've said before, I really don't like using colors to denote ethnicities, but he used it all the way through there, so we'll just do this. And he said in some years, there were slightly higher numbers of blacks in the labor force than whites. So was it slavery that caused this increase in single motherhood and caused this unemployment rate differences? The problem is that you don't he says you don't really see the acceleration in those things, the acceleration in the single parent rate, the acceleration in the unemployment, until a century after slavery. He said, although it is closely coupled with a large expansion of the welfare system and non-judgmental ideology. In other words, the government under Lyndon Johnson started this great society where they just gave people money. And they said, well, you know, you've been whatever, treated badly, so what we're going to do is we're just going to give you money. And if, you know, you don't have a job and you need some stuff, well, we'll just give you money. And supposedly that was going to fix all the problems. So, and the last point, but it hasn't fixed all the problems, because while, and this is true of segregation as well, which is a really interesting thing. I've seen statistics as well that when the United States was segregated back in the 50s, that there was a thriving middle class for African Americans. Because of the segregation, African American entrepreneurs were more vibrant. They were going out. They were building their businesses. And once there was this forced desegregation, all of a sudden, all these small little African-American businesses that had kind of a captive audience there, now all of a sudden they were being forced to compete with much larger businesses. And according to some things that I've read and seen, that actually led to a collapse of what had been and what was growing and becoming more and more of an African-American middle class. That's not to justify segregation. You know, that's not to justify anything like slavery or the like, but it's just interesting that sometimes our supposed solutions end up backfiring and causing more harm than we expect them to cause, both in desegregation and also in the welfare state. And the last point that Thomas Sowell was making is he said, just as Western Europeans benefited from being conquered by the Roman Empire, despite the brutality, because the Romans were brutal and they conquered Western Europe. But in doing so, they built roads and they exposed people to bigger concepts and, you know, broader things. And he says that blacks in America have a far higher standard of living than Africans in Africa. And he said there's no question that conquest and enslavement were traumatic. He said, but there's also no question, and he said, neither is any of it morally justified by the benefits. But the fact still remains that African Americans in this country, on average, are far better off than Native Africans in Africa. And all these things are just very interesting things. I'm not trying to say that, you know, we should just ignore that slavery happened, or we shouldn't say it wasn't good, or, you know, all those things, or that segregation happened, or that we haven't had things in the past. But when you look at it in a larger context, what you see is that slavery was something that was occurring all around the world. And it was in the Western democracies that people started raising their hands and saying, this is not right. And it was in Western democracies that slavery was finally put down. And it's only outside those Western democracies that slavery still exists in the world. And you also see that coming out of slavery, certainly there was a whole bunch of stuff going on with the Jim Crow stuff, but, you know, eventually that all got overturned as well. And that there was a rising, there was an increasing of potential, there was progress being made. And a lot of that progress seems to have been set back by our continuing efforts to establish equality and fairness. And I can pretty much guarantee you that this latest round of turning everybody against everyone else and condemning people because of just the color of their skin is not going to improve the situation at all. If anything, what we've seen growing out of things like critical race theory is we are going to see increasing tribalism, and we are going to see more strife, more turmoil, not less. And if the critical race theory people actually do manage to accomplish their goal, which is burn everything to the ground and start over, it is going to be orders of magnitude worse than it is right now. That is guaranteed. Because the people who are talking about burning everything to the ground have no concept how complicated this all is. So it's just going to be really fascinating to see how long we keep trundling down this path and whether or not people of good common sense, you know, start looking at all this and saying, okay, this is not working. This is dumb. We need to stop doing this now. So we'll see. I'm heartened to see that people seem to be standing up now, you know, like in school boards and those types of things, and saying this critical race theory is poison. It's just absolute corruption, and it's toxic, and we're not taking this. So it'll be interesting. We are in an extremely interesting part of time. Extremely interesting part of our history right now. And it'll be a fascinating thing. But thankfully, Jesus walks with us step by step. He helps us. He moves us along the path towards Him. And all of that means that every day is a good day. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.